of Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake up, Hollywood. This is your host with the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this incredible interview that's about to happen. We have Oscar nominees, director Karthike Gonsalves, and editor, executive producer Douglas Blush. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. How are you guys?
Wonderful.
Good.
Well, first I want to address Karthike. I told you briefly right before this. My mom grew up in Salem, which is very close to where you filmed this movie, and she went to one of your rival middle schools. So you have to tell me real quick, who was the better rival in either sports, or how did you kind of get the better of each other? Because I don't know anything about the rivalry, but I just know she went to Lovedale and you went to one of the rival schools, right?
Yes, I did. I went to St. Hilda's and she went to Lovedale, the Lovedale Lawrence School it was called. And yes, I would have to say that they were definitely better. We were always striving to be better, but we weren't quite there.
That's okay. My mom is listening, so I had to give a little shout out for Lovedale. But she was so thrilled that you both went to neighboring schools. She said, "Please tell her I said hello." And you know, I wanted to kind of throw that in. Douglas, you are a local LA native. You kind of had this expansive career also as a film editor and working on all kinds of movies. I saw 20 Feet to Stardom, which you worked on at Sundance originally. How did you meet Karthike and how did you get involved with this project?
Well, what's great about this whole collaboration is that it came from another Oscar-winning film called Period, End of Sentence, which was the, I believe, 2018 Oscar winner in the same category. So go Shorts.
That's right.
And that film was produced by our wonderful producer on this film, or was executive produced by Gunit Manga, who reached out to me and said, "There's this amazing project that we're involved in. You've got to meet Karthike. You've got to see this footage." And soon after, I was looking at these incredible baby elephants in this beautiful world of Tamil Nadu. And it was just unbelievable what I was seeing. I don't normally get footage like that. And I said, "I'm in. Just show me where to go."
And Karthike, I saw your movie last week. I stumbled upon it because I love elephants. And I was so blown away with your film. Like, I love movies. I love the art of it. But your short was such a beautiful depiction of India, such an incredible story about elephants and this orphanage. And you just painted such a beautiful, like, picture of where I'm from in India, too, with my family. But how did you come up with this concept? How did you hear about, you know, this orphanage? How did you get involved and come up with this whole film?
Right. Well, to begin with, I actually grew up in the Nilgiris, which is up at 7,000 feet in the Nilgiri Mountains of the Biosphere Reserve in South India. And the Tepakadu camp is a camp that was started 140 years ago by the British, first as a timber camp, where elephants were made to carry logs, and now it's more of a rehabilitation camp. And this is situated inside the Mudumalai Tiger Reserve, which is part of the Nilgiri Biosphere, which is composed of about 89 national parks within the span of three South Indian states, which is Kerala, Tamil Nadu, and Karnataka. So we're looking at a very massive natural reserve over here. And having grown up in the Nilgiris, I was always out in the wilderness. And I'm a natural history photographer by profession and then turned into a camera woman. So a lot of my time was spent out in the wilderness. But coming back to the story and the connection, this was a story from home for me. It was something I had been visiting, a place that I really knew in and out of all my life. The first time I ever went to that reserve was when I was 3 years old. And I lived in that park and I've walked through the forests of that very reserve. I've seen wild tigers and leopards on foot. And it's been a very special place in my heart. So it started out with me just falling in love with Raghu to begin with. And that's where this all began. I was driving on my way from Ooty to Bangalore. And I saw Bowman and Raghu walking at the side of the road.
Wow.
And then I was leaning out of my car because I was just so in awe of seeing baby Raghu there. I'd never seen a elephant calf so young and so vulnerable. And it was my first experience. And then here Bowman was with his big grin on his face beckoning to me. And he realized how curious I was about Raghu. He asked me to join them. So I pulled my car over on the left and went and joined them. They were going down for this river in the bath, and I got into the river with them. I had the most beautiful experience where I could scrub Raghu and play around with him in the water. Wow. And he was splashing around, and he was maybe about 2.5 feet tall. That's how tall he was.
Wow.
And he really didn't know how to use his trunk, which I found really cute, because elephants are so graceful. So suddenly seeing this young calf who has no control of the thousands of muscles he has in his trunk was really funny to me. And while all of this was happening, I really noticed that Raghu and Bowman had this very special bond. I've seen mahouts walking around with their larger elephants, but I'd never come across such a young wild calf before. And that sort of got me to the place of exploring why Raghu was orphaned. And that sort of brought a bittersweet beginning to the entire story. The Asian elephant is losing its habitat at a very rapid pace due to encroachment and climate change in a fast-developing country like India.
Right.
There are roughly just about 35,000 to 40,000 Asian elephants left, and the situation is actually very grim. We're losing elephants at alarming rates due to poaching and human-elephant conflict. And this is something I just wanted the story to be very positive, and why focus on all the depressing parts when there was just so much beauty around me and this really unusual family dynamic that I was right with at the very moment. And because Raghu's mother was electrocuted and died instantly after her herd had wandered into a nearby village in search of food and water, all of this was basically because of a prolonged drought that was in the area. So this is a direct effect of climate change, and that was depressing. So I really just wanted people to be able to understand these beautiful beings on a deeper level, and to also recognize their similar traits and intelligence. And I wanted to get people to protect them and their landscape, and show the importance of indigenous people like who are like Bowman and Belly, and what they had to offer as well. There's so much to learn from them. So that's how this story really came into being. And I think one of the most important things is that in this time, there are just so many stories of animals being killed and species dying out. So this was definitely a positive story that highlights the beauty of man and animal working together, and also this beautiful sacred bond that is there between man and animal. So I just strongly believe that coexistence is the way that we need to move forward into the future. And only through mutual respect and cooperation can we save the planet.
I love it, because it touches on, you know, conservation. It touches on the human element. It's putting it in the animal kingdom. Now, Doug, you know, I grew up in Los Angeles, and I remember one of my first trips to India. We went to Kerala to visit. That's where my family kind of originates. And I walked outside, and I just pulled open this, you know, ironclad gate, and there was a giant elephant just walking casually down the street with a guy on top of it. And I was like, this you don't see in LA. You just don't see anything like it. So what's so interesting is, when you're looking at a story like this, tell me what you're thinking, kind of piecing, how you're going to, you know, edit this or put this together. Also just like seeing, you know, the big picture of producing this, and, you know, having it build its path along this journey.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's just it, is the fascination of the unusual, you know, something that we most of us don't experience, and yet it feels like home for Bowman and Belly. You know, the beauty of that is to not make it this gosh wow travelogue, but to make it a real intimate experience with those wonderful people, you know, these two mahouts who took care of this this little unusual family, as Kartiki said. It's kind of, when you approach a story like this, you look for universal themes. You know, you look for stuff that everybody can relate to. I always thought when we're working on this that this was a global film. This was something that everyone could relate to. This wasn't just an Indian film. It wasn't a regional film. It wasn't an Asian film. It was a global film because we were telling a family story about very relatable things. In this case, you've got kids growing up. You've got kids being delightful and misbehaving and dealing with all the things that go on with kids growing up. And then eventually kids leave home. And that was something that I tied into because my daughter was growing up and getting ready to leave for college at the time we were working on the film. It was this beautiful parallel. And it was sort of, it's kind of helped me process a little bit because I'm dealing with these huge life changes. Plus we're in the middle of a raging pandemic, which was a whole other thing. So this is a pandemic baby film in a way where we wanted to make something to give people hope and a little bit of light in the middle of this this kind of nightmare that we all went through. In fact, Kritiki and I could not meet until only a few months ago in person.
Wow.
We did everything on Zoom, everything by phone and Zoom the entire time. And this is over two years of intensive work. And I'm really grateful that we had these tools to work with because otherwise it wouldn't have been possible to do this at all because of visas and COVID restrictions. But we made it work, and we would have these crazy work sessions. If you drill a hole through LA, it basically comes out right about where Bowman and Belly are living on the other side of the earth. So we're talking about about a 12-hour difference, 12 and a half hours, I think, when we were working. So we'd have to really time it. Kartik and I would be working either early mornings or late nights so that somebody could be in bed. We kind of made it work. It was a long, long road. And every night we discover something different. We discovered something new.
Well, we're going to play a little bit of the trailer. We're going to play the trailer. We're going to play this. We're going to come back and regroup for a second. So here's the trailer for Elephant.
We'll be right back. All right. I think we had some technical difficulties, so hopefully this sounds a lot better. But anyways, Karthiki, you know, one of the things that made me fall in love with the film was the way you shot it. And a lot of it, you know, I was reading your bio and you wait for the perfect light to kind of make sure that you have the right shot. You know, one of the things that was that became a character in your film was the hair on all of these elephants that you were able to get against the sunsets or against the sky. I mean, it was such a beautiful depiction of how human these elephants can act in some ways. Tell me about what that process was like when you were kind of thinking about how and when you were going to shoot.
Well, I really have to give it to the cinematographers on this who have worked so tirelessly over the last 5 years. We have Krish Makija, we have Karan Taplial, we have Anand Bansal, and I was the fourth cinematographer on this. And we all just went out there. In fact, it was a really strenuous process trying to find people who really could film human emotions on a whole different level, because I came from a natural history background, which I was able to support. So we found people who could work, who'd been with animals. And that was one of the core things that I was looking for, is somebody who could do a little bit of both and who was comfortable being around animals, because we didn't know we were going to be spending the next 5 years working with wild animals.
That's crazy.
So we all started out with a passion and love for the elephants, and everyone just immediately wanted to come and work on this documentary. So that was really special. And one of the bigger things that I would definitely like to talk about is I wanted to keep this with natural light. That was one of the things that I was really focused on. For one, here you have the life of Bowman and Belly, where they have this simple lifestyle, where they used candlelit. They had the small little candlelight in their rooms, and then they had small little bulbs, and that was what their life is like. And that's something I wanted to showcase because I thought it was absolutely beautiful. I didn't want to bring in large lights and light up the whole place, and that would take away from what the place is actually special about. So right. That was one part of it. And then also working with wild animals, and also working with animals like elephants, it's an ethical stand to sort of not use bright lights with wild animals. That was something that we were really clear that we wanted to work around. And that also meant having a little bit of a problem sort of switching between sunlight and shade in natural settings, because the change is so drastic. But it was something that we were all able to overcome and really just adjust to. And we shot across 5 years. We had 450 hours of footage, and we were shooting out in the wilderness. We had some, which was actually shot in the camp, but then we also covered a lot of natural history in this documentary. We were out with the wild elephants and tigers and leopards and all of that. So it was really special, and we really had to go out at the golden light hours, and we were out at dusk and dawn, because that's when the movement of the animals is really at the best. So right. It's been a beautiful journey of really just going out during the best timings to shoot this, which I think just added to the natural beauty that's already present in the forest. The forest is just absolutely stunning. And having grown up in that space, it's always been magical and beautiful. And I wanted to bring everything that I've ever experienced to life for the world to see.
Well, it was so serene too. And then, you know, you have these shots of tigers, and how did you kind of capture that without invading their space? And with an animal like a tiger, I mean, I know elephants could also feel this way. How did you kind of find the right distance to kind of put yourself in a point of safety, and also in a way that you were close enough to capture it?
That's an interesting question that you even asked that. So we would go out for days, and sometimes it would be a week and a half or 2 weeks. We'd go out every day and try to find a tiger, find a leopard. But then there were days where we'd see a tiger and a leopard on the same day, and we would run out of cards. So it was either nothing and days of waiting or months of waiting, or it was like, oh my God, the whole forest is with us at this very moment. We don't have enough cards to capture all of it. So I think working in the wilderness is unpredictable. Right. And when it comes to the tiger, we were actually driving around at that point in time, and we heard a lot of alarm calls, which basically signifies the tiger is close by. And we went close to the spot, and here this tigress walks out. In fact, the one that's in the movie. And she hung around us for 6.5 hours. And she just, we stayed in one place, but she would keep coming closer to us. So we would keep moving away because she was coming too close. And she just liked our presence, and she would sit down over there and she'd keep looking at us and we'd keep looking at her. So we were able to have such beautiful experiences alongside making this documentary, with being up close and personal with leopards and tigers. The tiger was literally outside our vehicle, and she just sat there, took a bath, she took a nap. It was really special.
That's wild. And that's crazy too. One of the questions I want to ask, what did you shoot on? Did you shoot on a Red, or did you shoot on another camera of your choice? What was the camera that you wanted most of this to be shot on?
We shot with the Sony FS7 Mark II. We shot with the FX9. We used the combination of that. I also used the Sony A7 S3 and the Sony A7 R3 for our beautiful time lapses. So it's a combination of a different range of Sony cameras and a wonderful set of lenses. Couldn't have been better.
And Doug, when you were getting the footage, I assume there was a first draft of what you were kind of looking at to get a perspective. Did you feel like it needed to be expanded, or did you kind of feel like it needed to be trimmed? Like, how did you kind of mold it in a way to find its, you know, story?
Well, this is a good chance for me to also call out the great work of Sanchari Dasmalek. She did a great job of putting together that first draft and quite a bit of good stuff from the film. She worked on it for quite a while in India. And then eventually we sort of got to that point where it kind of came over this way, and Kartiki and I were basically working together on the edit. So, you know, with so much material, this is really the power of the edit, is what do you choose? Which direction do you go? And one of the things I respected so much about what Kartiki was doing was the honesty of the footage. And I saw so much of this, and never do you feel like it's being crafted or being directed. It was really being witnessed. And I crave that in documentary. I see a lot of documentaries that are recreations, or they're staged or whatever. And here we had this beautiful sense of, let's watch what they do. Let's respect their space and their autonomy. And you know, the family did their family things. So, you know, we looked for footage that honored that. And also some of the spectacular world building of what was going on around them in terms of the animal and landscape and just biosphere that was all around them. It was just phenomenal. I mean, we could have easily made a 3-hour movie with everything.
Yeah, I was thinking you probably have hours and hours and hours of footage. Oh, yeah. It must have been difficult to just narrow it down and kind of find that narrative in all that footage, because you said you could have just had outtakes for like 10 hours, 20 hours, you know?
We had them. Oh, we could have done a 10-part series probably, but wow. I'm really proud of having the short format, actually. I think it was the great choice for this film because we kind of wanted to make almost like a timeless fable. It's a family story that transcends, you know, time. It's about families through eons, you know. And I think people are tuning into that because of that. We know that families are watching it. We're getting fan art from people around the world.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
Kids are drawing the elephants. They're drawing Belly and Bowman. They're actually watching together as family units. And there are not that many documentaries where you can sit the whole family down and say, hey, kids, you're going to really love this. It's a joy to work on something like that. Something I could have shared with my daughter when she was young, you know, and she loved it when she was 20 too. She would say, "How are the elephants doing, Dad?" And I would show her a little piece here and there. And it's just, it brought a lot of joy, in the process of working on it and just seeing this incredible world, which I cannot wait to see live. I still have to go and visit.
Oh man.
I've got to go now.
You've got to see it in the theaters.
That's right. I'm going to meet my elephants. That's right.
That's right. Karthiki, when you shot this, there's one scene in particular that kind of took my breath away. And it was when I think Belly, she called Raghu to sit. She said, you know, come and lay down. And Raghu laid down and waited for her to move before Raghu laid down. I thought that was like one of the most polite and loving gestures I've ever, and exchanges really between a human and an animal. And it was just so matter of fact and ordinary for them. What were some of the moments that kind of took your breath away while making this film, watching this interaction between man and beast or you know, human and elephant?
Well, that specific scene where Belly was actually asking Amu to lie down was very spontaneous. It was very spontaneous because we were actually waiting for Bowman to arrive. And we had our cameras with us, and that's when this just happened. And I think it was Karan at the time. He was so spontaneous. Both of them just turned the cameras on and were able to capture this while we were just waiting for Bowman to actually show up. And I think that's the thing when it comes to actual verite documentary, you can never tell what's going to happen. And you really have to be prepared all the time. And you catch the most beautiful moments when you least expect them. And I think that's what really made the documentary powerful, is we had all these beautiful moments that happened just out of the blue. And they were so special because that's when you really saw the bond with them. And it's just absolutely beautiful. And it could be that chances were we could have been filming for 5 years and we might not have got those shots. You can never tell.
So how did you know when you had enough footage? Like, when was that moment for you, that moment of Zen that made you feel like we have this with what we got?
That never happened.
Well, you're up for an Oscar, so it's already happened, you know?
I think for me, I fell in love with the elephants. I love Bowman and Belly, their family to me. And it was a journey that I just embarked on, and it's something that's going to continue for the rest of my life. The elephants are definitely going to outlive me. And they're going to be there for a very long time because elephants live almost the same as humans. So I think it's just really special the way we all bonded. And it's just really special. So, yeah.
One of my favorite shots too is when, you know, I think in the beginning, I think it's Raghu, that you just see his trunk just coming out and just playfully kind of, you know, waving around. And you just see this kind of very childlike feature in his presence. There must have been some bonding that you had with Raghu when the cameras weren't rolling. Tell me about some of those experiences.
It started out as a very personal journey that sort of transformed organically into a documentary. Initially, I was just spending time with the calf. And it was really special because I spent a lot of time out in the wilderness because of my background being a natural history photographer. And it was just very natural for me to be spending time with animals. But being able to spend it with Raghu was just really special because I've always seen much larger elephants. And then literally watching a young calf. He's almost like a son to me in many ways because wow. He was so tiny and he would always waddle behind me. I would take him for walks. He'd wrap his trunk around my arm and we'd go for a walk. And then he would play with me and he'd just want to cuddle sometimes. And it felt like a dog that you love so much, or your pet dog or something, but it was only different. It was a baby elephant, which changed the whole game entirely. And then we spent a lot of time before I actually decided I want to make a documentary on them. So initially, I was purely recording all these beautiful moments for my personal purpose on my DSLR, on a GoPro, and on my mobile phone. And some of that has actually been used in the documentary. So it's just a whole lot of personal time, just enjoying time with the baby elephant. And that bond has just grown deeper and deeper. Today, he's taller than me. When I first met him, he was probably a little taller than, a little higher than my knee.
Wow.
And now he's taller than me, looking down on me. And he knows I'm around. I sense his presence. But although I actually have taken an ethical stand not to go too close to him now because he's an older elephant. And I don't want people to go too close to wild animals.
Right.
So I try to be an example for other people so that people don't go up and get too close to him. So that's something that I've been very clear about as moving ahead also. So because we have to maintain a distance because he's growing into a bull elephant. He's adolescent right now. And it's safer for him to be further away from human beings.
That makes sense. So he doesn't kind of interfere with not knowing how to interact in a way, right?
Yes, we have our own special bond. We both know it. And I think there's nothing more to that because I understand and he understands. And I think that's it. It's love from afar.
Well, one of the things that I love that you did with how you shot this and how you directed this, you got these amazing images of all of these elephants' eyes. And they became like additional characters, and there were close-up shots, and you saw the whites of their eyes, and you saw their, you know, their pupils, and you saw this detail in them that just, you can't help but not feel connected to these animals. Was that like an intentional thing, or was it just like a byproduct of just trying to get right shots and just be prepared and aim the camera in the right direction?
Do you want the honest truth?
Yeah, absolutely.
They wanted to eat the camera up. They came really close. And they, it's just showed their connection to us as well. I think the close shots, we always tried to keep a certain distance because we respected it, but they didn't. They said, I want to be with you. And they would walk right up to us. So a lot of those shots were them literally coming to us because they wanted to be with us. And that's how we got those close shots. They were not planned. And it just shows their emotional connection to us as human beings. And that's what makes it really special, because even the shot with Raghu rolling his eyes into the camera towards the end, that was one shot where he always looks me in the eye. And it's just really beautiful. I just feel it's a way of connection. I think the eyes are the most expressive things, and with every living creature, and with elephants, it's no different. Raghu has very beautiful, expressive eyes. And you can literally see how he's feeling by just looking into his eyes. You can see if he's happy, you can see if he's sad. So I think it was very unintentional, but now that you're the first person who brought this up, so it's a great question.
You know, well, Nikki, that brings up a good point that we had on this film, maybe more than anything I've worked on, we had timelines that were really specific of types of shots. Like, we had elephant eyes. There's a timeline of elephant eyes. So if you really want to find out those elephant eyes, we got you about maybe a 20-minute string out of elephant eyes from the whole time of the shoot. Things like bird. There was bird timeline. There was, you know, aerials of the river. There was and bees. We had a whole bee scene, so we had the best of the bees. And so there were literally, I think there were probably close to hundreds of separate little timelines of subject specific stuff. And when Kartiki and I were looking, it'd be very easy to say, okay, this is a time for the monkeys to come back. Okay, let's get the monkey timeline out. Let's play with that a little bit. And there are all these choices we had to make that were part of this 2-year process of just going through and saying, all right, tonight we're going to focus on this part of the film, and we're going to look for these shots. And then we had a list, an ongoing list of, okay, we're going to replace this shot. We've got a better shot than that. And we kept going back and combing through it and finding just the right thing to make the mood at that moment, you know, the right big wide vista that just takes your breath away. And believe me, there were plenty that we didn't use in the film just because there were more than we knew what to do with. That's the kind of place it is.
Well, you definitely created something magical with this film. Karthiki, I heard this is one of your first films, if not your first, which is, that is crazy that this is your first film and it's up for an Oscar. But this is a question for both of you. Tell me what this journey's been like from completion of film, and you know that this has been a journey just to get it into the awards and kind of make the rounds and kind of like promote it, because you know, you're doing it in a way that is, it's a new game. It's a new ball game with streaming and Netflix and kind of like, you know, making that the premier place for people to watch it. But tell me what this journey has been like from you, from completion of film to now in 2 weeks, you're going to be going to the Oscars for this amazing movie.
Kartiki, you
go first.
Sure. It's been a beautiful journey. When I started out this, I didn't realize it was going to be 5 years running on to 6. So it's definitely the love for the entire project, for the people in it, for everyone who's worked alongside me, bringing this journey to life, and especially Doug for all his mentorship and guidance throughout this journey. That's made this very, very special. And I think it's just something that I think the world can enjoy and watch together as a family. And I think there's something in it for everyone, be it a young child and somebody who's all the way at the age of 80 or 90. I think there's someone for everybody in there, for families, for women, for men, for children, for animals. There's something in there. And I think that's really special. And I think the other thing is, I think it's just absolutely surreal that we've been Oscar nominated, I think, on behalf of Bowman Belly and our beautiful elephant friends, Raghu Namu. I think we're just absolutely thrilled to receive this great honor. And I think it's really going to help spread the message of the film to create more awareness, empathy, and connection to elephants. And not just elephants. I think to also other living beings that we share our spaces with.
Right.
And I'm also extremely grateful and thankful to Netflix for just believing in the power of this truly unique family story, which showcases the sacred, lovely bond between man and animal. And to Guneet and Sikya for all their support as well. It's been a great journey. And I think the best thing is that when Netflix is by your side, what more could you ask for? It's gone out to 231 million subscribers.
Wow. In
countries and in multiple languages. So I'm just incredibly blessed to have such a global outreach for this unique story. And I just really hope that this encourages other young filmmakers to go out there, tell their stories, however small it might be.
That's amazing. Doug, you're next.
Well, I mean, what Kartiki just brought up about inspiring that next generation, the fact we're getting drawings back from kids around the world and even and their parents too, it's just, it makes me so happy to think that we might inspire both the next era of conservationists and people who care about the environment and really want to help turn the tide of you know, deforestation and climate change, but also the next generation of filmmakers. I mean, I think for global filmmakers, and especially in this case, India, it's just such a proud moment because we're representing in a way that hasn't happened before quite the same way.
Absolutely. I
think that's really one of the best parts of this journey. For me, I mean, it's the fifth time I've been part of a nominated film, and we've won three times, which is fabulous, and we would love to get that, that batting average up, of course.
You're good luck then, Doug.
I got to tell you, though, this one's kind of special because of this global impact that we're having already, and I love the fact that it's being seen around the world and that it isn't one part of the world. It's the entire world is sharing in this, and for me, anything that touches the entire world is what an incredible joy, what an honor to be able to be a part of that. And, you know, with my own daughter going through that leaving home thing that Raghu ultimately does,
right.
I think it speaks, I know from hearing from other people, because they told me the same thing. They said, oh my God, I was crying because my daughter and I watch it together and she's going off to college. And it's like, that's the purpose of the film is to get people to bond over shared things and then focus in on these issues that we don't have to hit you over the head with it's climate change or it's this or that. It's really a family story. It's a timeless fable, I hope, that also brings people in and makes them feel closer to their own families, makes them care about the planet, makes them care about the animals and the humans on it. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I'd like to add on to that because I think that I think one of the other points is that I really learned that storytelling is at the heart of human existence, and storytelling can be very powerful and can change the way our brains and our hearts work, bringing us closer to one another and actually connecting with a whole bunch of people. So I just really hope that storytelling can be used as a tool to unite different communities and species, but to also share the beauty of the natural world. And I think that the Elephant Whisperers that we've been working so hard on, I hope that it offers a beam of hope of mutual respect and cooperation and a way forward through coexistence.
You know,
it absolutely does. And the one thing that I notice with a film like this, it is so captivating. You're on bated breath watching these scenes and these interactions. Did you ever ask Bowman and Belly if they ever got too attached to these elephants? Like, how were you able to tell this story from their side with also being like, you know, the elephants, they belong to the jungle and that is their home. And how was there a divide between how they're saving these animals and also having to let go of these animals at some point? How were you able to kind of, you know, get that story across? Or even did they tell you anything that was kind of emotionally raw for them to deal with?
I think it really started out because I actually had a very deep connection with Bowman in the beginning, and then later on I met Belly. So we'd already been speaking a whole lot about life and about everything. So I think when I actually started getting more into their personal life, they were ready to share everything that they had. And I already had a connection with Raghu and with Bowman. And I was also from the same space. I was not an outsider coming in to tell the story. So the trust that they had was completely open. It was like they were part of my own family. And I think it really helped with the entire journey because they looked at me as being one of them. And I think that's what really propelled the trust across from each other. And with Raghu, I already had built a massive amount of trust with. And then came Amu. I think I met her literally 3 months, when she was 3 months old. So that elephants never forget. And I've really experienced that they never do. Even if I go back, I don't see him for many months and I just go stand by the gate. He has his trunk lifted out because he can smell that I've arrived. So I think it's just really special. So, yeah.
Yeah, this happens in the footage. I mean, having watched all this, again, the greatest thing about working on this film is seeing this very natural, organic bond that Kartiki had with Bowman and Belly. It was never forced. It felt very, not only respectful, but just almost familial. You know, you were in the room and it wasn't like a scientist with a telescope coming in and observing.
No, it's like we were all flies on the wall. We were all flies on the wall watching this. Yeah. You know?
And that can be sometimes a little rare in documentary. You know, there's a lot of people unfamiliar with something coming in to document something. In this case, it felt like kind of a family home video almost in some ways. It was like coming home to a natural place that you know so well, Kartiki.
In fact, coming back, what you were saying, we actually have a scene in the movie where it was just before the feeding scene. I think Belly looks off at Bowman and says, "You come and feed him. He's not eating his food." She's talking directly to me. And that was initially, I was like, oh my God, do we want that? But then I realized we wanted all of that because it was her talking to me and there was nothing more beautiful. Even when in the beginning of the movie, when she says, "I don't want to marry a man covered in ash," she was talking to me.
So that's so crazy.
Really special having her have this beautiful connection with me itself. And I think that really just made it even more special.
And did you premiere it at a film festival first? Did it premiere on Netflix? Tell me what that festival circuit was like and how it's brought you to this point, because that is a journey most people may not ever get to experience. And that's a rush and a roller coaster on itself.
Yeah, we premiered at Doc NYC, which is kind of one of the great doc film festivals in the world now. And because we finished it fairly late in the year, I mean, it was a lot of the other docs had premiered at other festivals. So we didn't have a chance to go to Sundance or South By or Tribeca or Toronto. But the first great festival that was in the path of the film was Doc NYC. They saw it and they immediately programmed it in what they call their short list, which they proudly put together this program that is somewhat predictive of the Oscar shortlist, and they like to get it right. So they picked us out of, like, we had not been in the public before, and they saw the film and put us right in the shortlist, which was that's really a nice validation that we had something special going. And the festival was great. We had amazing reactions. It was first time really crowds had seen it. And then after that, we were on Netflix not that long after that. So it was kind of the first big hurrah for the film. We just knew people were coming out of there. People were crying. I mean, I have testimonials from people walking out saying, "Oh my God, I don't know what just hit me," you know, and that's just really gratifying as a filmmaker. You know, you want to affect people in that way. You want people to really feel something.
And Kartiki, how was this experience for you coming from India, making your first film, you get into New York City's Doc Fest, and then this starts to happen? Tell me what that experience was like for you.
It's been really surreal, actually, because I think when I first started this journey, I never dreamt that I would actually be going to the Oscars. It was never on my agenda. And I didn't know how this documentary would be accepted across the world, because here you have this tiny little indie film from the south of India, and it was not even in English. And it was an animal that was in India, which a lot of countries don't even have. So it was a big question mark. And also I was trying so many new things, because all along I have seen science documentaries come out and which have actual scientists talking about elephants, about their current situation. So I was in the back of my head, I had this small little thing going on in my head that I really wanted to see, that if people started learning more and understanding more about elephants, would this help them to start protecting them instead of seeing all the bad things about elephants? and so on. So this was kind of a little test in the back of my head about whether I could connect to audience who are not involved in wildlife, who didn't, because people who love animals are already out doing whatever they can. So I really wanted to reach out to people who wouldn't have been able to see an elephant or other animals in general through this movie. So that's, and I think I have my answer. I think people can connect through, I think people can
absolutely
and share deep connection with something that they learn to love over time. Because we, apart from the beautiful fan art we've been getting from our fans, we've also been receiving tons of emails to my personal website ID and to my personal email on social media. And these have been 8 or 9 paragraphs written by people from across the world explaining how this documentary has touched them in so many ways, that they've understood animals, they've solved family problems, they've reached out to children. And it's just been really beautiful that they've gone back with a much deeper understanding to our natural world and the animals that they live amongst in their various parts of the world. And I think it just brought something out within them. And I think that's very special. I feel I can literally say that I'm done with this movie and it's ready to move on, because I feel like I've gotten so much back in return from this. It's
that's amazing. And it's well deserved. I had this amazing experience with my family to visit an elephant sanctuary in Sri Lanka. And what I really loved about your film, you know, with when you see all these elephants at an elephant sanctuary, it's almost overwhelming, A, that you're just seeing all these elephants and they're just running about and they're playful and they're bathing and all of this. And you can't take your eyes off any of them. You just are seeing them all in a mess. But yeah, what you did with this narrative for this film is you created this simple story of an abandoned, you know, he's kind of the hero in the film. Raghu is a hero. He's very much like the on his hero's journey. And he's an abandoned animal because his mother died. And you see how humans adapt and kind of come in, and you were able to create this story that is like, we're just lucky to be, to bear witness to this story of these elephants. Was there a moment that you kind of, you know, you knew you had a spark where you met Raghu and it was an instant connection? I mean, you said initially you were looking at Raghu out of the car, but what was your first maybe touch with Raghu that made you feel like this bond or this animal was something special?
It was the first time I said, I lay my eyes on him, to be honest. He just looked over and he had his arm wrapped on Bowman's arm. It was just love at first sight. I never quite believed that, but I do have to say that love at first sight it was Raghu.
And Doug, when you saw this footage coming in, or when you know, were getting an idea of like what this was like, you grew up, you're an LA native. What was this story like for you, just seeing that you were witnessing something that many people would not ever get the chance to experience? And it kind of creates this magic of filmmaking where you see that you have something, a treasure trove of footage, where it's not like a National Geographic film where somebody's telling you about what the behaviors are doing, where it's we're in the jungle with these animals, with the elephants. How did you know kind of where, how the distance of this journey would go?
Yeah, well, first of all, a shout out to my hometown in Detroit, Michigan. I'm LA for a very long time, but I was born and raised in Detroit, Michigan. So, hey, Detroit, how you doing?
That's the home of Motown.
Motown, that's right. And thinking about the footage, I mean, we saw this almost, in some cases, the footage expands into this almost cosmic level of expansion, there was a moment where in the film a young child looks up in a mother's arms and looks up, and the starlight is almost reflected in that baby's eyes, and then we have that beautiful time lapse that Kartiki got of the Indian skies above the reserve.
That was beautiful, by the way.
That's a moment. I think that whole fire dance scene, that's something we built over time. And we realized this was something bigger than a moment in time or Belly's, you know, pre-wedding dance. This was like a connection with the universe in a larger sense. And there were moments like that all through the film. And I just kept thinking, we keep finding this magical connection all the way through the movie. And you know, a lot of films, you have beautiful shots, but you rarely get that flow that almost feels like everything is in sync with itself. You asked earlier about favorite shots in the movie, and I was kind of running through my head. There's so many moments that I love in this movie, but there's one shot that's iconic for me. It's when Bowman is caught out in the rain with Raghu, and they wake up and it's raining on them, and he pulls out an umbrella, but on his way back, as he's walking back from the field, he's holding the umbrella over Raghu.
That was so sweet.
Like, it's just the way, of course he's going to do that, because it's his baby. He's protecting his baby. Yeah. And for me, that one image sums up the whole film. There's such a beautiful connection there that ties into all these other things of caring and child rearing and family.
Carthy, I have to ask you, like, just because many people won't see all the other footage that wasn't in the film, I know this had to be somewhat of a big conflict for you as the filmmaker. Yeah. What was a scene or something that happened that you were able to catch that it just didn't need to get into the movie? I'm sure both of you know many scenes. Maybe for each of you, why don't you both answer this question? What was a scene or a moment that you captured that didn't get into the movie that, you know, some of our listeners and viewers can kind of imagine was taking place?
Well, one was that's definitely not in the movie, but the Katnaikan community actually make this liquid that they put onto the nails of the elephant's legs. Wow. And that is traditionally made with a bunch of herbs and other things which are natural. They make it into this paste. So we had a beautiful scene of Bowman making this paste. And that was something I would have loved to put in. But that's more about how they use their ancient indigenous knowledge to look after the elephants. They don't give them tablets and all of that. They use their indigenous ways and medicine to take care of the elephants. That was something that would have been really special. And the next beautiful moment that I would have loved to put in is during the making of the movie, alongside some of the other natural scenes, which I'll come back to quickly, is we actually documented an historic moment of the bamboo flowers. So the bamboo was basically, it flowered and it died. And this happens once in 70 years.
Wow.
And we were able to document that. And that was a tough choice to take away. But Bowman and Belly harvested the bamboo rice and it sold for quite a bit of money. But this happens. And the last time Bowman experienced this was when he was very, very, very young. So just a beautiful moment that we were able to capture. And the entire bamboo forest dies. And it takes a lot of time to come back. And since the environment has changed so much, we don't know when it's going to come back and if it's going to come back.
Right.
Things have changed in the last 60, 70 years. And the planet was very different back then. And can it come back is another question. So,
That's a great question.
One more thing quickly. So, while Doug was talking about the beautiful starry skies, that was actually a meteor shower that was captured in 2019-20, and then the moon that we have, the orangish moon, is actually the blood moon from 2020.
Wow.
So we have a blood moon, we have a meteor shower, and we have a bunch of stunning time lapses and wild elephants that we were able to capture via drones. So we have a lot of beautiful moments that were just a piece out of time that we were able to put in the documentary, because you can actually see meteor showers. I mean, you can see the meteor shower. You have all these streaks going about.
Yeah,
we had about 36 of them happening in that very moment.
Wow,
it was absolutely beautiful.
It was so beautiful. It almost looked fake. It was like, whoa, is this actually happening? But I mean, it's a documentary. Of course, it's happening. You know, so yeah, that was crazy.
Magical. It's magical.
Yeah.
I mean, what about you?
Well, we will be having the 9 Blu-ray bonus set coming out soon with all the footage.
Awesome.
There is one scene, Kartiki knows this so well, the one that I just adore in this movie, because it's really about Bowman and Belly's relationship, is a scene where, it's before they get married, it's a very domestic scene where Belly is folding the clothing. And she kind of is chastising Bowman because he's like, I can't fold. I don't know how to fold. And it's a classic like husband and wife argument about who's going to do the work. And Belly just kind of laughs him out of the room because he's terrible at folding. And I just thought, God, that, again, it's so universal. These silly little things that couples have between them, and that is normal in every family. And that it was just a brief scene, but it also made the film just a little too long. So we just had to take some of these out.
Yeah. No, but it's a magical thing that you get to experience those scenes, even if it doesn't make the film, you know, it's like, you know, it's there. I had a random question just because when I was watching it, some of the elephants had chains around their legs. Was that to like let people know that they were coming, or what was the reason for the? It almost looked like chain bangles on the bottom of their legs.
So I will use this opportunity to also talk about why Raghu was taken away, because I think that and the chains sort of come in hand. So Raghu was actually transferred to another caregiver in the same place. And elephant calves, especially males, as they grow older, need to learn from their peers and not just the parental care that Bowman and Belly gave them. So in the wild, you can actually notice how younger males learn from their older brothers through close interactions, which also include punishment sometimes. So moving Raghu from Bowman to another caregiver, basically to a more dominant person, replicates males in the wild dispersing to join their older males. So the forest department literally tries to see what's happening in a wild herd and try to do the same thing with young calves as well. And I think these are basically elephants that have survived under human care for so long. So what happens is when an elephant calf has been raised from a very young age with humans, it's really difficult for them to be released back into the wild because they're not able to fend for themselves, is the first thing. And the second thing is that they tend to deviate towards human settlements, which again is dangerous because here you have all these indigenous people and communities living on the periphery of the forest. So that when elephants deviate towards humans because that's all they know, that tends to create more human-animal conflict, which is not a good thing. And so, and also I think the main thing for the chains is basically to ensure people and public safety, as these are animals that really interact closely with humans. So that's why they end up wearing chains. So.
Wow. So is it for the sound that they know that they're close, or just to know that they can be, you know, kept at bay if something crazy happens?
It basically allows them to go a little slower than they normally would. And because anything can happen, they walk on some of the main roads, they work very closely with humans, and it also gives them a chance to be able to basically slow them down so people can actually hold on to the chains if need be. So okay. If there's nothing, the elephant doesn't have much to hold on to. So the chain really helps in case things go wrong as well. So
that was interesting. It was a silent character in the film that, yes. You know, I don't know if a lot of people are going to be thinking about it, but it was just something that when I was watching it, I was like, I wonder what that's for. And it's, yes. You know, it's because you see these elephants in the
wild habitat. In simple words, the best way to put it is the same reason we have dogs and leashes. We put a leash on our dog so it doesn't run off. And this is the same thing. It's the same use, except it's a bigger leash than a cotton leash that you'd use on a dog.
So let me ask you this. Now you're getting ready for the Oscars. Mm-hmm. How do you keep staying cool as you're getting ready for the Oscars in 2 weeks, which is just crazy? How do you guys feel about this experience? You're about to walk into one of the biggest moments of all of your lives. This is your fourth time, Doug and Karthiki. This is your first movie and first Oscar nomination. I'm sure it will lead to many more. But, you know, tell me what this experience is like for you both.
It's been really interesting. I think it's one of the best times of my life because it's really, I think just being in the US and being surrounded by so many fellow documentary filmmakers has been phenomenal. And just knowing that there's a larger community out there, I think being in the forest alone for this many years, sometimes you get lonely. And I think just knowing that there are other people out there fighting for messages that they want to share with the world has just been something that's been beautiful to experience, to have and know that you have a community out there who is by your side. And I think that's extremely special. And going down this journey, we have all the support and love that we can get. And I think everyone's helping making very special for us. And we've been able to connect. We've been able to watch the other short docs. And I think everyone has such beautiful work out there. Each and every film has something really special about it. It's just an honor to be amongst such wonderful filmmakers in this journey. And yeah, I will pass this on to Doug.
It's been a great journey with Kartiki and Ganeet. We've been so many places together now, even though we just got to be in the room together only 2 months ago, 2.5 months ago. But I feel like I've known you for a few years at least, because we have over Zoom. And one thing we have, a little bonus at the very end here, and I don't know if Nikki, if you know you have this there. We have a video of us not being too keeping cool when we found out about the nomination. There's a little bonus video that I don't know.
I don't have that. I don't think I have that, but you.
And here are the nominees for Best Documentary Short Film. The Elephant was.
We do have it. That's amazing. We do have the clip. That must have been such a rush. That must have been an incredible, incredible rush.
It was great because we were around the globe too. Kartiki, you were in Seattle. Yes. I was in LA, and we had people in Mumbai.
Yeah.
It was just great. It's just great.
Well, I hope you guys win because it is a phenomenal movie. It is something the world can learn from. I am so honored that you guys are on the show today. Kartiki, you are the first Oscar nominee we've had on Wake Up Hollywood, and it warms my heart that it's a female Indian director from the part of India that grew up where my mom grew up too. So I can't thank you enough. Where can people find you both if they want to work on films with you or want to see what you're up to next? Kartiki, you go first and then Doug.
Yes. I have an Instagram handle, at Kartiki Gonsalves. And I also have a website, which is kartikigonsalves.com. And I'm also on Twitter as Earth Spectrum and Facebook as Kartiki Gonsalves.
All right, Doug.
And my wife, Lisa, and I have a documentary company here in Los Angeles. And you can find out all about us at madpixfilms.com, madpixfilms.com.
Well, thank you guys so much for being guests on Wake Up Hollywood. We're so thrilled to be a part of this journey for you guys. We are all going to be crossing our fingers and toes for you all. Kartiki, you made an absolutely phenomenal film. And no matter what happens, just know you've already won the hearts of so many and you've created change in such a positive way. And Doug, I can't thank you enough for all the movies you've been a part of to elicit the same kind of change and put a spotlight on voices that need to be heard. So thank you guys so much. And I'll be watching guys on Oscar night. So I'll be crossing my fingers and toes. We'll have to celebrate together, win or lose, because you've made a phenomenal, phenomenal movie together.
Thank you so much for having us. It's been wonderful talking to you.
We're bringing the elephants. That's right.
Yes. That's right. Well, you both have an open invitation. Whenever you have something to showcase, please come back. This is the whole point why I started this. I've been a touring musician for 20 years, and I wanted to create a platform for artists to showcase their work and create a timeline of everything they're doing. So please come back and keep us all informed of what you guys are both working on, okay?
We've got good stuff coming for you, Nikki.
Thank you.
All right. Bring it on. Let's do it. Thank you, guys. Love and light to both of you. And good luck. We'll see you in a couple weeks, okay?
See you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Thanks very much.